to me. I can't believe it myself. Suddenly I'm up on top of the world. Should have been somebody else. Believe it or not, I'm walking on air. I never thought I could feel so free. Flying away on a wing and a prayer. Who could it be? Believe it or not, it's just me.
I can't believe Dazza had the nerve to say something else you probably wouldn't know. Jerk.
Well, I mean, it's early 80s and you've not heard of Cagney and Lacey, and there's another few that I've mentioned of theme music that you've no idea about, so
but this
I just think of that. Yeah,
this one's pretty famous. Hasn't Vinny done karaoke of this? Vinny of the WrestlingObserver.com?
He may well have done. But yeah, I mean, it didn't last very long. I have to say as well that all these people, all these young people today will complain about, you know, the TV shows and stuff. And we've got Daredevil, we've got Jessica Jones, we've got Luke Cage, we've got Gotham, we've got Arrow, we've got The Flash, all these things. This is what I had to watch when I was younger. This is the superhero stuff that I had. We had really, really bad Doctor Strange and Spider-Man TV movies, and then we had stuff like this. It just, you know,
wasn't there also the Hulk and Wonder Woman?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, they're probably the better ones.
Yeah, and then you had the best Superman movies too.
We did get the good two Superman movies, yeah. But yeah, but on TV, because Great American Hero, we used to show in the UK on, I think it was like on a Saturday lunchtime. And it was one of those things that I didn't particularly like, but I was sort of like a real couch potato even back then. So I would watch it because it was just something to watch. And it always used to infuriate me because it was basically, it wasn't very good. It just seemed to be taking the piss out of the whole concept of superheroes. So, you know.
Well, speaking of you being a couch potato, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everybody. This is Tony, and you're listening to a brand new episode of Tales from the Couch Zone. And as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Dazza. Dazza, how are you doing today?
I'm doing fine, thank you.
You had to explain to me that you guys had moved your clocks up forward. So this entire time, I thought you were late. I'm like, this is not like Dazza to be this late. Because you were online, you were giving me your news stories, but you were like, oh, God, what's wrong with Dazza? Because I think it was last week we had the situation where, like, oh, I forgot to turn Skype on. It's like, maybe he's doing that again. And it turns out, I thought both of our clocks both went ahead, but it was just his.
No, it went back.
Oh, it went back?
It went back, yeah. So we basically we got an extra hour in bed this morning.
Ooh, that must be nice. So
it was, because I was working. But yeah, it means that the nights get longer. So it gets darker earlier, obviously. But I personally, I will take that for the extra hour in bed.
you'll take days on end where it gets dark earlier, it stays dark longer, over one extra hour of sleep.
Yeah, well, I don't think ahead. it's really funny because my parents, we have this sort of like disagreement. My dad prefers it when it goes forward because he hates the fact that it's sort of more night, whereas me and my mum are the same thing. We want that extra hour in bed. I hate it when it actually goes forward because it means we're losing hour, especially if I'm working the next day. That's always awful.
Okay, we were talking Greatest American Hero. We were talking about 7's TV. Since we brought it up already, let's go into this week's news, which includes... Dazza, what are your thoughts on the season premiere of Walking Dead?
Oh, God. Jesus, what with the episodes of the Battle of the Bastards this year in the Game of Thrones being so goddamn tense, and this one. I mean, I personally thought it was a really, really great opener. Mm-hmm. I know a lot of people, it's divided a lot of opinion, this one, because a lot of people are still basically butthurt, for want of a better phrase, of the fact that they basically used this sort of as like the cliffhanger. Mm-hmm. So you didn't know who died or anything, and that people were sort of complaining because they had to wait, and, you know, they're doing all these petitions and everything and all this, when, you know, it's television, you have cliffhangers, it's meant to basically, you know, be dramatic. And actually, you know, went quite early into finding out that Abraham was the one who basically got, you know, got, you know, killed with by Negan with the baseball bat. But then he threw a swerve on us because you thought that, you know, that was it. That's the one who died. And then, and because there was always speculation about Gwen and the fact that because he was the one who was killed in the comics, are they going to do the same thing and everything, you know, and we had a swerve because he got killed as well. And it was absolutely, both of them were really, really brutal, to be honest, and really, really shocking. And Negan was an absolute, you know, just to get over a villain in one episode to basically, you know, to make you hate this guy so much. I thought we did such a great job of it. It's like in television at the moment, you know, we started in Game of Thrones, we had Joffrey. And he was the most hated villain that you could ever hope. Then we had Ramsay came along in Game of Thrones, and he was even worse and even more hated than Joffrey. And now you've got Negan, and it's just I just think he's a, you know, I just think he was an absolutely great villain, strangely charismatic as well. I mean, he had this thing that when he was sort of killing them, he was sort of, you know, making jokes and sort of like, you know, toying with everyone's emotions and stuff. But he had this, like, you know, really compelling, you know, and the basically pretty much the entire episode was him. You know, it was him sort of talking, even in the episode, even bits where he sort of took, I forgot the guy's name. You know, the main guys that, you know, took him off and, It was all Negan. It was him driving the story. It was him doing the you know, the dialogue and sort of everything. And I just thought this was a great opener, an absolutely, you know, fabulous ogre. And they sort of, you know, they didn't wuss out, but they took away two really, really well known characters. I have to say as well, I've got this sort of real fascination at the moment with watching people watching television, and I spent ages afterwards going on YouTube and checking out these videos of people who are basically filming themselves for their reactions, and I'm just sort of addicted. I've started this with Game of Thrones. Mm-hmm. I've been watching people watching Game of Thrones and stuff, and these like group people have like group parties and they're sort of watching them bar and everything. And I've started doing this with, I did this with Walking Dead as well. And people's reactions were like, you know, people really distraught, particularly when, you know, when you kill Glenn and everything. You know, it's fascinating. One thing as well that after Walking Dead, they have this show called Talking Dead, which is sort of basically like a sort of like a recap show. And they did like a special live one where they actually had all the cast on. And it was just actually was quite emotional because, you know, you can obviously tell that they sort of like, you know, they really spend so much time together, and they were basically saying goodbye to, like, you know, the actors who play Glenn and Abraham. And it was actually quite moving, personally. It was even more moving than the episode, the fact these people in real life, they know that they're not going to be, you know, hanging out with these people anymore. But yeah, as an opening season, I just thought this was, you know, just so well done. And there's so many storylines which are going to come up, obviously, you know, because they're basically working for Negan now. And, you know, at some point they're going to be, you know, but you know for a fact that at some point there's going to be some sort of like fight back or something. But this is just going to be like a really tense, and I think it's going to get worse before it gets better episode. The only problem that I'm sort of, you know, always me with Walking Dead is that, and I've even though I've sort of like, you know, become a fan gradually, I've always watched it, but sorry, the last couple of years that I've really sort of like become a fan, is it's a season that basically you'll get like one or two really, really great episodes. Normally the first episode of the season is like an absolute, you know, awesome episode, and then you'll get several like really slow episodes. Normally when the characters basically all branch off and go off to different directions, and then you'll get like the solo episodes, you know, sort of, you know, and you could see a bit of that in this one as well. You know, because some of the characters were basically going the separate ways and stuff and going in different directions. So I'm just worried that it's going to be one of these situations where we get sort of like, you know, some like really slow episodes, and then we'll get like, it will basically, the pace will up for the for the mid-season finale, and then again it'll come back, and then it'll be slow again, and then it'll ramp up for this, the end of things. So I just hope that this time they kind of pace it so it's sort of, compelling. But from all accounts, I'm sort of excited for this season, and I know it's put a lot of people off the actual. The violence in it, and the fact that they've killed off sort of, too many characters. But, a lot of people are sort of like saying, ditching the show and everything and saying, they're done with it and they're done. They feel like the creators, play around with them and everything. But, it's a TV show and it's drama and it's meant to do that. It's basically meant to put through, these characters and put them through trials and everything. So, I'm personally there. I'm going to be, there watching the rest of the season.
Did you appreciate my spoilers on Facebook?
I thought you were a complete dick for doing that.
I'm waiting because I'm like, at this point, I'm sure everyone's watched, so I'll have a little fun with everybody, and I'll post spoilers and see what happens. And then Alex, my buddy on Comic Conversations, chimes in. This is why nobody likes you.
Yeah. In fairness, you don't have many Facebook friends anyway, so... in fairness.
I'm trying to see if I can find what you found. You were as bad as Meltzer, but at least, I'll leave off the rest because it's like, it's referring to Dave Meltzer, but yeah.
Yeah. I have to say, I know, there are people, and I do really hate people who deliberately do spoilers just to basically mess with people. Because you get that on Twitter. You get people who are basically trying to tell as many people as possible that Han Solo had died and stuff.
I'm more of a guy, it's like, I don't mind knowing what's happened. It doesn't ruin my enjoyment of it. If anything, now that I know what happens, it's like I want to see how they got to that point. So I'm not one of these people that cries over spoilers, because really, at the end of the day, it doesn't matter where you end up, it's how you get there. So I don't really have too much sympathy for people who are like, well, you ruined what happens. And I'm like, well, okay, and? I knew what happened in the new Star Wars film, but it didn't ruin my enjoyment of the film.
Yeah, that's where we differ. I like that shock reaction. I'm basically sort of, but I have to say that... if there is something that I want to watch and I don't want spoilers, then I stay off the internet because of jackasses like you.
Well, it's more so for, and it's like, I knew what time it was airing. So by the time the show was over, that's when I posted it. So I was like, well, okay. Yeah. By then, people that really care about spoilers would have watched it by now. I did give some consideration to folks that actually care, but at the same time, I was like, nope, I don't care. You're going to be a big baby about spoilers? Wah!
I did have a bit of fun. I actually put because it aired on a half-hour delay in the UK, but obviously not a lot of people are going to stay up to watch Walking Dead. So the first thing on... I posted it before the episode had even aired. I just put I put an update up just saying, oh my God, I can't believe it was Daryl. And quite a few people were, you haven't just spoiled, and sort of like really mad. And then it turned out obviously it wasn't Daryl. Mm-hmm. And I sort of like made it sort of saying, I was saying, my friend Daryl came around. I just said, I can't believe it was Daryl. But the thing is, I actually put, like I said, I put this up on the Sunday, well before the episode had even aired or anything. But But the thing is that, when I woke up, I actually watched it first thing before I went to work or anything. And as I'm watching it, I'm thinking, oh my God, what if it is Daryl? And then everyone's going to think that I have actually spoiled it for him, even though I haven't. But the thing is, it was pretty much a safe bet, because if I would have been massively, massively shocked if he had actually killed off Daryl, because he's kind of like the one that basically. He's kind of like the Jon Snow or Daenerys or Tyrion, mm-hmm, from Game of Thrones. He's the one that you can't imagine them actually, going through and killing off, because he's just such a,
Except they did.
For a start, he brings him in all the ladies, so,
Oh, I don't know how we're going to transition from this to Old Man Logan trailer discussion. Okay, it wasn't called Old Man Logan, but that's pretty much what they're going for. From the opening second when they had the Johnny Cash song, the Hurt song, I was like, oh, this is awesome. And then the rest of the trailer, I was like, eh. All right, it's fine. They got enough of Old Man Logan elements in there to where I may give it a second try. But they change enough stuff to where I'm like, we'll wait and see. That I'm skeptical, but I'm optimistic as well.
I thought this was great. I mean, for start, just as a trailer, the Johnny Cash music and everything, I just thought it was so well done. But you see, the thing is that I'm not as sort of tied to this sort of, like you have it. You want the Old Man Logan story. I kind of want an Old Man Logan tone story, but to me, you can't really redo the Old Man Logan story unless you've got all the sort of a load of rights to the superhero type.
See, this is where we differ. We talked about this when we talked about the poster and then a couple of the photos from the set. There's enough X-Men characters where you can substitute everybody out and you can put somebody else in there. Like, you could substitute, since they had Hulk as the big nemesis, because I guess that was Wolverine's big debut in the comic books. It's like, well, okay, you could replace that with Sabretooth. Sabretooth, you could say, even more so, is Wolverine's nemesis. So you could replace that, and then you could replace Hawkeye with, what's his name? The Lucky Guy. What's his name? God, what's his name? The Lucky Mutant. I forget his name now.
The Lucky Mutant.
Yes, that hooked up with Dazzler.
Oh, Longshot.
Yeah, you could have Longshot replace Hawkeye.
Yeah.
There's enough there where you can replace everybody. Instead of, Red Skull, you can use Magneto or something. I feel like there's enough there that you could, with the X-Men characters, that you can replace everybody and still have more or less, I'd say, 90% the same story.
Yeah, you could do that. But I think the thing is, I was so intrigued by what we got as regards to what's happened to all the other mutants. Because basically he says, all the mutants are gone. Mm-hmm. And that just got, what has actually happened? Have they been wiped out? Has there been a virus that's killed them all off? Has there been like a Days of a Future Past type storyline anyway, where they've basically, to me, that got, I'm really intrigued over what that is. And why did Wolverine survive? Why is Professor X survive? I have to say that the buddy element of this, I absolutely loved. I want to know what that rule means that Professor X, what was in? Was it basically a broken down version of Cerebro, or has it been sort of like, kept captive somewhere? There was so much in there that really, really intrigued me of which direction the world's gone in. Because at the end of Days of Future Past, it looked quite a hopeful world that had been created.
Mm-hmm.
That basically, it seemed that this school was flourishing, mutants seem happy, so it just seemed like a really positive, as if everything had been set into a brand new future. And obviously that doesn't last. Some shit goes down. And, I was sort of, it just, everything about this, I was just sort of, I want to know what's gone on. And I was fascinated with this. And there was one bit in there as well, but just this little scene that was sort of different from the rest of the film, but that sort of seemed to give it some sort of, real heart to it, is where it showed you Logan, Xavier, and the little girl who we presume means X-23, basically just like sat at a meal.
Mm-hmm.
And they seem to be sort of like enjoying each other's company. And it just seemed as in this sort of like all this desolation, that there's like one scene where they get to be sort of happy for one. And it just seemed that it's almost seemed like maybe I'm reading too much into it, but it just seemed to like, one brief moment where they're actually happy. And it just, and which made, whatever sort of, which is probably not going to last and stuff. And I just, there was just so much in there that I just sort of, intrigued. But also, Professor X is the first thing he says in the, in the trailer is Logan, what have you done? So what is that referring to? Does he have a because in Old Man Logan, it's actually Wolverine that wipes out most of the X-Men.
Exactly.
Is that basically it? I mean, this could be. And the films are basically these days are messing around with us with trailers. Mm-hmm. You know, there's the stuff that they're doing with trailers that doesn't basically sort of bear any resemblance to what happens in the film. I mean, the notorious one of this for me is Suicide Squad, when they showed you the Joker's laugh. And Harley Quinn goes, uh-oh. And all the Suicide Squad members start to, like, freak out. And it gives the impression that the Joker's basically in the building about to basically attack them. Mm-hmm. That, you know, and then when you get the film, you realize that that's total bollocks and none of these things that may, you know, actually fitted in that way at all. So it could be that that line is basically just something that's basically, you know, just totally taken out of context and might not even be in the film. But it could be, you know, maybe Wolverine had a hand in all the mutants being, you know, and that's why he sort of got into solitude and stuff. And that's, you know, because there's a bit in there as well where Wolverine doesn't seem to want to help X-23. He seems to basically, you know, it could, he actually makes this comment, you know, somebody will come along and help her. And it's Charles that basically says, you know, someone has. So maybe he's basically gone that pacifist way of life. Because he's basically done something, you know, really, really bad. We don't know.
Which, but, if they use that element, that's close enough to Old Man Logan to where I'll be like, okay, because the whole point is throughout the duration of the stories, he doesn't want to pop his claws, he doesn't want to get violent, and that's cool. I like that. If they can co-op parts of it enough to where I'm satisfied, then I think that's probably the way to go. Because to me, there's so many great aspects to that story that make it so great. If they can take all those and still tell their original story of sorts, I'll be on board. And it seems like they're going in that direction, but I haven't seen enough to be sold on it.
My only disappointment in it was the Reavers, which I was really excited about of being in it. Mm. They looked to be just like a group of basically regular combat mercenaries or whatever. Whereas I wanted them to sort of have that kind of Mad Max type look about them that they have in the comic, you know, with all the sort of, all of them with all the cyborg parts and everything, and Skull Buster with his, you know, with his sort of makeup and that. I kind of wanted almost like a Mad Max type.
Oh, now you want something from the comics, right, Dazza?
Yeah. I never said it was consistent.
You pick and choose, right? When I want the story elements and the overarching story to be similar to Old Man Logan, you're like, well, they can't do that. And then when they show the Reavers, you're like, oh, it's disappointing. I wish they would have done that. Like the comic was like, well, Dazza, you're picking and choosing here now.
Yeah.
So what's the stuff you want? You're fine with picking that from the comic, but when it's stuff when I want, oh, I don't know if you could do that, because, you know, there's so many characters that Marvel owns the rights to, I don't know if you could do it. It's like, okay, Dazza, I see where you're coming from now. You pick and choose when the stuff, it's the stuff you want. Okay, I see how it is.
Well, that would be a tribute to Chris Claremont as well. You know. If it's Chris Claremont that made it, then it should be in the X-Men films. Because Chris Claremont was the X-Men. Chris Claremont should still be writing that comic today. And he should have total autonomy.
You don't know that? In fact, have you seen that they announced two new X-Comics? Gold and Blue? I figured you'd be a fan of that. They're bringing that back. I wonder if they're going to have Claremont on one of the books.
Well, no, because that's when they got rid of Claremont.
Oh, okay. Oh, it was?
That was the year when they created those two things. Hmm. They kept him around for basically like one issue just to establish that. Hmm. And then that was his basically, you know, them finishing with him.
Ah, okay.
So screw that. I gave up on the X-Men a long time ago, but it's not my comic anymore.
Well, here's the thing. If they get somebody good to write a couple of these books, I'll be on board. Like, I'm hoping and praying and I'm crossing my fingers, but I don't think I'm going to get it. I want Hickman on those X-Men comic books. I don't know if we're going to get it. There's plenty of other folks they could probably put on those X-Men books and it'd probably be halfway decent. I don't know, Dazza, who are you a big fan of as far as writing is concerned? I know you often talk about Claremont and then you talk about books that you like, but you never, more often than not, you don't bring up modern day writers.
To be honest, I don't. Mm. It does, you know, the I'm just not that big of a connoisseur of the actual, you know, writers today to be able to sort of, like, you know, say anything. I mean, I know enough to know that that I don't particularly like Bendis's work. You know, his dialogue and his storylines and everything is just something that I just really can't take to.
He's not bad sometimes when he does solo books. That's the thing I've noticed. Now, obviously, his Iron Man is probably the exception. But more often than not, when he writes a solo character book, it tends to be pretty good. Because the thing is, you don't have the characters that all sound exactly alike. And they talk in the massive war bubble tree. So when you're dealing with just the one character, his stories tend to be a lot better. But yeah, I know what you mean. When Bendis does a team book, especially when he was doing X-Men, when I had to read that, God, that was horrible.
Yeah, it's like everyone talks in the same voice. Everyone's like a comedian, and those sort of like, you know, those like really, really fast-paced storylines. Fast-paced like dialogue exchanges where they're saying like, you know, one word to each other and stuff like that. That just sort of really, I really can't take to that. I find it really, really grating. I mean, the one name that does spring to mind of somebody who I like, you know, modern wise, I like, and basically it's because of his run on Captain America is Brubaker.
Ooh, that'd be nice.
But he's pretty much, from all accounts, he's pretty much done with superhero comics completely.
Or is he? You never know, Dazza. He only has a couple of books. I think the fade outs, I think he's wrapping that up. I don't know for a fact because I don't read that. He started Kill or Be Killed, but he doesn't have that many books, Dazza.
I think that, yeah, if you read his Twitter, though, he seems pretty much that he's basically, it's more so much to do with the fandom that is sort of like, that is, you know, just has no time for it. He'd just rather write independent stuff. And let's face it, it's something that, you know, you can imagine he basically, he pretty much could do what he wants in comics. So, you know, if he feels that, he's not into the superhero, you know, stuff with the big companies, you know, he's not, but from what I read, he's not somebody that you're going to get back. And it's a shame because, I mean, I loved his stuff on Daredevil as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, you always have to forget that could just be a negotiation tactic. It's like, oh, geez, I really don't want to write these Marvel comics. And then they offer him a big pile of money. He's like, oh, I now I don't seem to mind. I'm excited to be writing X-Men now. I just so happen to have this 2-year story arc just in my drawer, just ready to go. How about that? But I hate Marvel.
I guess I don't know. You never say never, but yeah, I won't hold my breath on that.
Okay. Let's see. I think that's going to do it for this week's news then. I know we were sort of struggling, but we somehow made it out one piece. Let's move on to our next segment, Rate and Slate. Now, obviously, we started in the 1970s, and we've made all the way through until 1996. So let's go over the top 10 performing films of 1996. These are from TKO170.com. These are all based on box office receipts that have nothing to do with quality. And at number 10, we have Eraser. Number 9, The Nutty Professor. Number 8, Jerry Maguire. Number 7, 101 Dalmatians. Number 6, Ransom. Number 5, The Hunchback of Notre Dame. Number 4, The Rock. Number 3, Mission Impossible. Number 2, Twister. And at number 1, Independence Day. Are we going to have to flip this? Because I know you said you had something in mind for your slate. You had a rant going. So do we want to flip this and we go straight into your slate? Or do we want to do the proper order and go with rate first?
No, we'll do it the proper order.
I'm just eager to hear your rant now. I was like, ooh, let's skip my meat and go straight to the pudding.
No, we're going to have the pesky greens first.
Okay.
Yeah, my rate, and this is actually going to... This is going to be a surprise because someone in this film who I give a lot of stick to, and they've given them quite a lot of stick to in recent weeks for certain films and stuff. But the guy I'm going to go the film I'm going to go with as my rate is Jerry Maguire.
Huh.
Because basically, I think Tom Cruise is absolutely fabulous in this. To me, this, I know he's sort of down now as an action hero and everything, but and he is good in some of those sort of roles, even though it's sort of, I basically just can't buy the seething tough guy look about him. You know, when I see him in films like Mission, and I like the Mission Impossible films, but when he's doing the like the sort of like the really tough macho stuff, or in Jack Reacher and stuff like that, I just look at the screen and just think, who are you kidding? I'm just, you're short, you're not Wolverine, I'm just not buying it. But in Jerry Maguire, I just thought this was a really, you know, it was really great in it. And I know it's sort of, you know, it's got like, you know, the romance thing, but the thing about this film is, it was just such a, it was so timely as well. It was basically all about the him being a sports agent and just sort of like basically sort of starting to take a look at what he was doing, you know, career wise and, you know, the ethics of what he was doing. And it was sort of, I think it just was sort of timely because we were sort of in the '90s and when basically we'd started to get past that, that sort of, you know, celebrating greed and capitalism and everything. And things were starting to basically sort of, you know, big business, people started to take a look at it and see that it was just basically about accumulating wealth and not really sort of caring about the consequences or building anything and all that. And it's just a little scenes in there, like the actor who basically, the sports guy who refuses to sign a car because it's not the car that he endorses and stuff. And just little scenes like that. But I just, you know, this was a, I just really liked Tom Cruise in this film. I think this suited him so well. And I just sort of, you know, and the whole sort of, you know, the whole sort of show me the money song and everything like that, and the scene where he goes to on draft day, he goes to the, you know, the big draft day, he's got the sort of, you know, the client who basically sort of like, you know, telling him that he's with him forever and everything, and it turns out that he signs against him as well. I just really like this film, and there was sort of like, you know, a really a nice sort of, you know, love story in there as well, and the sort of, you know, the kid in it was great, and you know, it was often say that, but you know, the kid in it was absolutely awesome. Yeah, I just you know, for its time, I just really, really enjoyed this film.
All right, there you go. That's your rate. For me, often we talked about this when the 90s came up, that there was often there this glut of great movies. It's really hard to pick one over the other. There's some that I'll give honorable mentions to, especially when we're just talking the top 10. But for me, guys, this is really hard because there's no one that really rings out. It's like, well, you got to go with this one. God. I even when you were going off and I was listening to you do yours, I was like, well, there's so many ones. It's like, I could jokingly say Independence Day because, you know, it's one of those films where I watch even now and you take it for what it's worth on its face value and it's fine. But I don't know. I mean, you have movies like Mission Impossible and The Rock on the list as well. And then I remember as a child, 101 Dalmatians and The Hunchback of Notre Dame, I remember liking. Although I think that 101 Dalmatians, I wonder if that's a remake or if that's the re-release of the original. I have to believe that's
it's the remake with Glenn Close.
Oh, it's okay, the live-action one. God, yeah. It's for me. It's a three-way tie, and they're all for different purposes. It's Independence Day, Mission Impossible, and The Rock. I'm gonna go with the most credible, the most presentable of the three. I'm gonna go with Mission Impossible. Sort of the piggyback off what you were saying earlier, just Tom Cruise, big action star. This was really when he was, I guess, sort of. You could make an argument that he was at absolute peak. He showed in this year that he could do the wacky romantic comedy and Jerry Maguire, but then he showed he could still be the action star in Mission Impossible. And it's funny, you say how he's still sort of, in modern day, he's sort of faded from being the action superstar, but from what I saw, he's still negotiating. In fact, didn't we recently talked about how much he was getting paid for the latest iteration of Mission Impossible?
Oh, yeah, I'm not saying he's faded as the action star.
Mm-hmm.
I just basically, I don't buy him as the action star.
Oh, okay.
When I'm watching him, I am, you know, he is like basically the biggest action star at the moment, but I don't buy him as an action star. I just, when he's sort of doing all these, in the first Mission Impossible movie, I actually sort of bought him because he's sort of, the Mission Impossible films are kind of like the Fast and Furious films, in they started getting more preposterous as each film. So the stunts became more and more sort of like outlandish and everything like that, and they became, you know, the actual fight scenes suddenly became like a karate expert, you know. Whereas in this first one, it was sort of, you know, we'd not got to that stage. It was quite, you know, there was a lot of down to earth elements in there. You know, it wasn't like the sort of the unstoppable soldier it would become later. So, you know, but yeah, so that's I'm not saying he's not a sort of a big action star. I'm saying I just can't take him seriously as that.
Ah, okay. Well, then also you have to think what kind of profile does a Mission Impossible have in 2016? You I guess you can sort of make an argument. I mean, that's not the point you argued. But you can make an argument that it's like, well, he's doing Mission Impossible 2016, but it's really, how many people care about that? Okay, we got the rate.
Speaking of spoilers, I do remember the Mission Impossible, because there was a big twist in that film. Mm-hmm. I remember on the WWF, Raw, as it was at the time, Jerry Lawler basically blurting out the actual the twist on live television. There was probably some sort of reason, some petty reason behind why they did that as well. It was probably like a rival company that was basically financing it or something. But yeah, I do remember him live on television giving out the twist.
Jerry. Oh, but I'm bad, right? I'm unforgivable. All right. We got the good out of the way. Let's talk the worst of the worst, Daz. Actually, you know what? There's a segment I've been doing since we started this thing. Before we move on to Slate, I'm going to go with honorable mentions, because we usually we base rate on Slate off the top 10. But then what I notice, I usually see in the top 50, there's some honorable mentions in there. So I'm going to go with Space Jam is a notable entry. Let's see what else here. I'm probably going to forget some. Daz, do you have them in front of you? Jingle All the
Way. I've got them. Yeah. What was Scream?
Ooh, nice.
I mean, that was pretty much it. That was the sort of thing that basically everyone started doing the horror spoofs after this. But Scream was the best one. It really played around with stuff. So
I'm curious where you land on this. It's one of these things that at the time it was received as just the most horrible movie. But as time has gone by, I think history has been more forgiving of it, but I'm still of the opinion it's not a very good film. But The Cable Guy?
I didn't like that one, because I didn't like the character.
Yeah, it's one of those things.
Go ahead.
Okay, it's one of those things at the time where everybody watched it. Jim Carrey was on fire, and then this movie came out, and everybody just soured on the movie, saying it was like one of the worst movies ever. And I'm sure if we get to the Razzies, I can't imagine it not being on there, because people were so down on it. And I think since that time, I think people have been more forgiving of it. But I'm to that point where, yeah, it's not as bad as people said it was back in the day. But with that said, it's still, I wouldn't consider it a good movie. It's a so-so movie, but people made it out to be one of the worst movies of all time. And to me, it's just not there.
I think the thing, a lot of Jim Carrey's roles up to that point, it was basically annoying. The characters were like sort of annoying, but they were kind of harmless or fun annoying, you know. Whereas in The Cable Guy, it was quite a sinister. There was like a real sinister edge to the character. Almost on the sociopath fake. I think, I mean, for my personal thing, I'm never a big fan of these films where you've got someone who's basically trying to take over someone else's life. And for some reason, that's one of those themes that basically always makes me feel uncomfortable in a film, and I find really, really annoying. So that's why it was for me. But I think it's basically because this time it was basically just a step too much into the, you know, being dark for a Jim Carrey movie. And also, I think as well, Jim Carrey, it got to the point where this was maybe one sort of comedy too many. You know, we'd been getting comedies from him virtually every single year, and it just got to a stage when it was kind of, you know, comedy kind of, you can basically really tire someone really fast in comedy, particularly if they're doing the same sort of thing. You know, I feel the same thing about Will Ferrell at the moment. He's almost sort of typecasting that sort of Anchorman type role and movie, and it's that you can see that is. You know, that to me is sort of, you know, you can see people like sort of, you know, selling on that, you know, the newer films aren't doing as sort of well and stuff. So that's, you know, that's what I think that possibly is.
I was doing research on the film and I didn't know the original role for the Cable Guy was originally written for Chris Farley.
Oh, I didn't know that.
That would have been a completely different movie.
What else is it? Star Trek First Contact, which I really like.
Yes. Mars Attacks is also on the list.
I really like that one.
Yeah,
that's a fun movie. That's a film when I first saw that in the cinema, I was disappointed with. But when you watch it sort of again, I really like a lot of the stuff in that one. The humor's great and everything.
Beavis and Butthead to America.
That is surprising. You know what? I actually really like that film. But I think that there's some. The opening where they're basically looking at the empty space where the television was,
yeah,
and the sort of, and it takes them ages to find out to figure out what's actually happened. I just think that's just because Beavis and Butter was one of those TV shows that if you were like I was a teenager at the time, so I kind of sort of liked it, but my parents would basically be sort of like turn that crap off or turn that down, you know, because they couldn't stand the laughing and stuff. Mm. And I think it was one of the things that you'd think, how can you make a film of this? You know, it's okay for a 15-minute segment. But the film itself, there's actually some really, I would say touching, but some like really sort of, there's this bit in it where one of them sort of goes on this massive rant about never getting to score. Mm-hmm. And how they always want to score, but they never score. And it's just really well done. The sort of, you know, I actually really, For what it was, I think this like way overachieved on what it really should have been.
Yeah, other notable entries on this. I feel like I'm sucking too much time going into these notable entries. Fargo. I have to imagine when we start going to Best Picture nomination, that's probably going to maybe win Best Picture if not nominated. This one I'm disappointed. From Dusk Till Dawn is at number 48. That's a shame, Dazza.
That is a shame.
That's a crying shame. That film was fantastic. I wish it done better so I could have gone on in detail about it. But yeah,
when we do a Tarantino episode, we could sort of include that. He is in it. He's not very good in it, but he's in it.
Since we've done the Halloween show, and if you haven't already checked that out, where Dazza and I list our top 10 Halloween movies of all time. Now that we've done specials, we have those under our belt. I'm hoping we can do the Quentin Tarantino episode sooner rather than later.
Yeah, we'll put that together. That's no problem.
There you go. And my last final notable entry is the film Matilda. That was a great little family film.
Okay. I'm just going to pick a few out of these. Trainspotting.
Ooh.
Which I don't know how the sequel is going to be tomorrow. But Trainspotting, you know, the film itself was great. Even though a lot of people seem to think it's glorifying drug use, which if you watch that film, I don't see how you can say that is glorifying drug use at all. When you've got a main character who basically goes into the worst toilet in the world just to sort of get the, get some drugs. I don't get that feeling at all.
Okay.
Evita sucked. Hate of that film. Madonna's in it, of course. I'm hoping that turns up in the Razzies later. Oh, Dale. Oh, you know what? I wish Daylight had got into the top 10 because I would have absolutely ripped the shit out of that movie. I hate that movie so much. There's a scene in Daylight where, and it's just, it's a really, really bad film, disaster film all around. There's one scene where the characters are all trapped in this tunnel, and there's always like basically this water starts leaking in, and there's all these rats start coming in, and one of the characters just kind of just like sits down and just sort of and just like waves a hand away as if she's done with the movie. It's really funny. If you watch it, it's just this weird thing. It's almost like I'm done with this film. She just like gives up.
Oh, that sounds awesome. I need to check it out.
And yeah, I think I think there's no others that I can sort of see in there, but I sort of Striptease was a horrible film.
You know, it just occurred to me a while ago, I didn't mention it up until now, but these are films from 20 years ago. Do you suddenly feel old, Dazza? It feels like just
yesterday. No, I'm in my prime.
It just feels like yesterday that these films came out. It's like, oh, that was 20 years ago. Oh, I'm suddenly very tired and I need to sit down.
And Tom Cruise looks the same.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know if that should relieve me or be more depressing that he has enough money to make himself look that way, or 20 years isn't that bad.
You know what we need to do?
What do we need to do, Dazza?
We need to join this Church of Scientology.
Well, I will say this. I've never been a fan of that that space demon Xenu, so we're halfway there.
Okay.
All right. Speaking of Xenu and Scientology, let's talk the worst of the worst.
The one that I'm going to go for is a film that I actually saw in the cinema, and I just thought it was a completely dumb, stupid film, and that is Twister. I have so much I want to say about this film. For a start, I honestly, for the life of me, don't understand what the main characters in this film were trying to do. Mm-hmm. Okay, this is a disaster film. You've got a massive whirlwind, typhoon, whatever you want to call it, Twister. And I don't know what these characters were, what their actual aim was. You know, they weren't trying to escape this thing. They were trying to get near it. They were trying to chase the Twister, which is really a fucking stupid thing to do. And there was sort of some sort of plot where they were trying to set this device up that would basically, and this was the big finale in the film, that they managed to get this device to work, and it basically sort of sent all these tracking devices into the Twister, and they were all sort of cheering them as all this like music, all this like triumphant music. It's like, oh, we've done it, we've got, you know, it's like, what have you actually done? You've not stopped the tornado, you know, you've not basically wiped the, made the world safe for tornadoes in the future. You've not basically defeated the tornado or anything like that. Tornadoes are still going to happen. It's just that they basically set these little devices into it, unless I'm missing something that I don't actually get, which is quite possible. I just don't get, you know, what the actual aim of what they were trying to do is. You know, a disaster film should be trying to get away from a disaster, not chasing it like a bunch of jackasses to sort of, you know. At least in Sharknado, it ends where they destroy the tornado in one of the stupidest ways ever. You know, they actually blow it up, which actually did when I watched Sharknado. I did actually go onto the internet to look up if you can actually stop a tornado by blowing it up, and you can't. But at least there's some sort of resolution there. I didn't get what the resolution was in Independence Day. You know, it's not sort of, you know, defeating tornadoes for the end of time. But, you know, the other thing that really got me about this film is there were so many really, really dumb, cliches in it. You had the character who, when she was a young girl, her parents had been killed by a tornado. So she dedicated her life to chasing tornadoes.
She wanted revenge.
Yes! That was a thing. She wanted revenge on tornadoes. Yeah, you know, I'll get you, Mother Nature.
She's your face at the tornado. Yes.
Yeah, he's kind of like the Quinn in the Jaws films, where he was basically, his experience with sharks in the, when being in Indianapolis went down. He saw his friends killed by sharks. So he basically pretty much became obsessed with defeating sharks. You know, a bit, you know, the Captain Ahab type thing. She became like a Captain Ahab character. To defeat tornadoes. I'm going to rid the world of tornadoes by setting off these little devices into it. So it's just a fucking stupid motivation. But then you also had this character early on. There's a group chasing the tornadoes. And then another group on the other side of the road come up. And they're also chasing tornadoes. But where is this, the group that we have, are all sort of this like ragged sort of eccentric type scientist type. They're all in black sleek cars and they've got on black uniforms and everything. So they're the bad tornado hunters. And they actually say that, oh, that's so-and-so. He's just in this for the money. What money? What money is there in chasing tornadoes? What do you do? Do you catch the tornadoes and then basically use them as power? Or, you know, do you start breeding them and use them, you like tornado farms?
I don't consider myself any expert, Dazza, but I think when you chase tornadoes, the idea is you're studying them, so you learn more about tornadoes. Because there are people that, in fact, do that over here in America, that they do, in fact, chase tornadoes looking to study them. So it's not one of these phenomenons that's exclusive to that movie. It's, in fact, something that people do in real life when they want to study them.
Yeah. So 49 people are also saying they're going to vote for Trump in America as well. And 51% say they're going to vote for Hillary Clinton.
Yeah.
I don't care. But a lot of people chase tornadoes. A lot of people do dumb shit in America. But the thing is, again, where is the resolution there? They're studying them, but... Okay, again, where is the money in studying, in chasing tornadoes and studying them?
I think it's...
Is there really money that you've got people who are saying to, I'm going to chase tornadoes, but I don't care about chasing tornadoes for science. I'm in it for the money.
No, well, I think it's for, like, government grants, and I think it is, in fact, for the science, but there's... I think there's enough government grants out there to study tornadoes. I'm sure there probably is some lucrative money in there. Because why else would you do it? You wouldn't be doing it just out of the kindness of your own heart. I have to imagine studying tornadoes is probably pretty lucrative, considering nobody wants to do it.
Well, obviously the reason why you would do it is because your parents were killed as a child. And so, yeah, since then you've been, you've decided that you're going to track down tornadoes.
Well, I think all that we've learned about tornadoes to make them so we can prep for them better. I'm sure most of that's been learned from people like that who've actually studied them. So, and everything from all the details, but the pressurized air or whatever. I know there's tall tale signs of when you know a tornado's coming, and I know that's how they're able to prep now for people in advance to let them know a tornado's coming from all the studying they've done. So it's not one of these things where it's absurd. It's like, no, they studied so they can predict them in advance.
You're right. This was an awesome movie.
No, I'm not saying it was a good movie by any means. I'm playing devil's advocate and saying, well, Dazza, there is in fact some science behind this and blah, blah, blah. I'm not saying it's a good movie. Now you're arguing like me. I know you've seen me and Alex argue, and that's the way I argue sometimes. Oh, so it was a great film, right? Everyone should watch it. You don't get to do that. You don't get to use my argument style against me, okay?
There's also a really funny bit in there, because when he starts off, Bill Paxton, he's basically got a non-tornado chasing girlfriend, because Helen Hunt's for tornado chasing, and that's his ex-wife or ex-girlfriend or whatever. Anyway, he's got a new girlfriend at the start of this, and she's like an outsider because she doesn't chase tornadoes, and she gets scared and everything, you know, and they all make fun of her because she gets scared in the face of tornadoes and stuff. And then at one point in the film, she kind of just leaves him, and they don't like have a falling out or anything. She just kind of says, I'm going to go now, and I'm basically not going to marry you because this is your life and everything. And I think in her mind, the character's just sort of saying, I've seen you sort of, that this is what you like to do, and I think you're really, really stupid, and I don't want to marry you anymore. I don't want to marry someone who basically chases tornadoes. And she just basically, you know, goes off.
How does that not get brought up on the first date? What do you do for a living? Oh, I chase tornadoes.
I see, because that's the thing. At the start, he's pretty much distanced himself away from the tornado-chasing community. And then he basically, throughout the film, he realizes that the thing he really wants is to basically chase tornadoes for the rest of his life with Helen Hunt. The best bit in it was the bit with the cow. I will give it that. The bit with the cow sort of, you know, flying through the air. That was quite funny. And when it comes back again, we can't work out whether this is a new cow or the same cow. but that is the only good thing in the film. I think this is a really stupid film.
you've made that clear over the last 10 minutes, Dazza. That's just as fine, because again, I'm copping out again, because there's no film I feel passionately about. There's films obviously that I could make easy work out of like the Nutty Professor. But I'm like, yeah, you know what? All things considered, it's you pretty much get what you pay for in that film. I was thinking when we were making our top 10 horror films, I was thinking about pulling Killer Clowns from Outer Space because I'm just like, well, you kind of know what you're getting from Killer Clowns from Outer Space. The idea it's a bad movie. It's like, no, you know what you're getting, so it's hard to complain. With The Nutty Professor with Eddie Murphy, it's like, well, you know what you're getting, so it's hard to be disappointed.
His career, this is like the start of basically the end of Eddie Murphy.
Really? I would argue this is probably the last time people cared about him. Because I know they've made a trilogy out of these films. So, or I don't know if they made a trilogy.
But I said he's still going in the top 10. So, but yeah, but this is the kind of sort of. This is a bit where we sort of. Creatively, shall we say, is done.
All right. We've tooked our rates and our slates. Now, obviously, I said there was a good chance. That what was the film I pointed out? God, it's gonna drive me crazy now because I know it was just in front of me just for a second ago. When I said Best Picture nominations.
Oh, Fargo.
Yeah, I would have thought Fargo, but I'm looking at Best Picture right here. Do you have any guesses, Dazza?
I think I remember.
What is it?
I think it was English Patient.
Yeah, but I would have thought it's like I thought Fargo won that. Maybe I'm remembering that incorrectly because it's like I thought that was the winner and I thought it was tipping my hand. But I guess I'm sort of pleasantly surprised it was The English Patient.
Why are you pleasantly surprised? Did you like it?
Well, it's one of those things I thought it's more so an indictment of Fargo than anything else. It's like, I thought it was a great film. I heard so much about this film, and then when I finally popped in and watched it, it's one of those things to where, I notice people are starting to say this now, I'm not the only one, where people said you can't go in with expectations, you can't hear anybody's review, because one way or another, you're gonna be tilted one way or another. So when I watched it, it's a really good film. They even made an FX series about it. But just like when I heard all the ranting and raving at the time, and then I think I watched it maybe 10 years later. I watched it. I'm like, okay, this is good, but it's not great. So I don't understand what the big hubbub was about. So the idea that didn't win Best Picture. No, but I have not seen The English Patient. Is it a bad movie?
It's not so much a bad movie. It's just dull. It's just really to me it's like really slow and tedious, and it's just kind of I just really can't say if you try to ask me what the story is actually about. I'll be honest, I don't really remember. It's one of these things where stuff just seems to happen. It's just I basically just sort of I mean it's a nice looking film in many ways, but yeah, as a it's not one that I would ever watch again. I think it was one of these that I kind of watched because it had won the Oscar, so I wanted to sort of see for myself. And it was based on like a really famous. But I just started working in a bookshop, and this was like, you know, this was at the time, it was like a really, really, like, you know, popular book and everything, but it, you know, critically acclaimed and stuff. But yeah, the film I just found really tedious.
Okay, we went over Best Picture. Let's go over Worst Picture according to the 17th Annual Golden Razzies. Now, you know the gimmick, Dazza, where I list off the nominations and you try to pick what won Worst Picture. Oddly enough, The Cable Guy, not on this list. All right, let me go off the titles and you try to guess which one. From Universal Studios, we have Ed, Barbed Wire, Striptease, The Island of Dr. Moreau, and The Stupids. Dazza, which of those five films won Worst Picture in 1997?
I'm going to guess Striptease.
You would be correct for once. There was some stiff competition. Some of these films I've never even heard of. Like I've heard of the Island of Dr. Moreau, but I'm sure this was probably a remake. But
it's really bad. It is really bad. I think that... I think the thing that a lot of people really hate about it as well is Marlon Brando in it, and I think it was like a really sad thing that, you know, and a great actor like Marlon Brando who basically sort of pretty much I think destroyed his own career in a lot of ways just because of who he was, you know, was sort of reduced to basically being in Tripe. Like this, it was really, really horrible. Val Kilmer was in it, if I remember right, and he was basically at this point, he was one of these that basically it was kind of phoning it in a lot of his movies anyway. But yeah, that's a really bad one. Barbed Wire, of course, was sort of, there was basically a backlash against, because it was basically Pamela Anderson trying to do an actual movie. I wonder if Dr. Moore about, but there's basically, I've never read the complete story, but apparently there was lots and lots of stuff going on behind the scenes with that film. That's one of these that when it came out, it was like a really troubled production. I've got to admit, I don't know Ed and I don't know the Stupids.
Let me look at Ed. Oh, you'll like this, Dazza.
What's that?
Let's see. Ed is a 1996 American sports comedy film about a talented baseball pitcher and his friendly ball-playing chimpanzee as his team's mascot.
Oh, my God.
And then The Stupids is with Tom Arnold. That's all you need to know.
All right. It's sometimes like people come up with basically... I mean, okay, for a film like that, somebody's come up with that idea and then someone else has said... Yeah, that's a good idea, and let's give you a load of money to make it.
You see, here's the thing: I don't know which movie you're talking about because both are pretty awful. Well,
yeah, the Ed, the concept of Ed, you know, let's have a monkey in it. It's...
Well, I can justify that. It'll do great with kids, and kids will love it. Adults, I'm sure, are going to have to take them to go see the film. They're going to absolutely hate it and be miserable, but kids will eat it up.
But. No, I'm just looking it up. Matt LeBlanc's in it.
Oh, that's.
I'm guessing this. This would be before Friends. What would it be before Friends?
Before he became the UK's biggest star of all time.
Yes.
For those of you who don't know, Dazzy, do you know the entire backstory of that thing with Dave Meltzer of the WrestlingObserver.com?
Pretty much, but it's worthy of retelling.
No, I'm saying I don't know the context of it. I know he said that, and everyone laughed and had fun with him. But it's like, yeah. Do you know what brought that on?
Yeah. Basically, what happened is Dave Meltzer of the Wrestling Observer, a guy who basically he's basically the leading guy on wrestling journalism and pretty high up in MMA journalism as well. He knows his stuff, but he's basically somebody who basically, if he has an opinion, he basically thinks he is right and will basically, you know. Anyway, he comes to the UK and he comes to Manchester to cover a UFC event. Mm-hmm. And the day of the event, he basically takes a walk around Manchester to, say, soak up the, you know, to learn a bit about British culture. And then he thinks that he's basically, because he went in various places in Manchester and saw lots of Matt LeBlanc merchandise, which, to be honest, I personally don't know where he was going, where he saw his merchandise. He might have seen posters and stuff or some magazine covers or stuff like that. But I've lived in the UK all my life. I have never seen a lot of Matt LeBlanc merchandise anywhere. But he also said that he saw Marilyn Monroe merchandise and John Wayne merchandise. So he basically came away with, because of that one visit, he came away with the feeling that the British, their megastars are all basically based on Americans from the 50s and 60s, okay? And also that Matt LeBlanc was a massive star in the UK. Just on that, like, one afternoon, not going out. The thing is, if you went out in Manchester, Manchester is a really, really big student city. And so basically shops in Manchester will cater to that. And basically stuff like, you know, like when I was a student, I had sort of like the Marx Brothers posters on my wall, and sort of I had like you know, Casablanca posters and Charlie Chaplin and stuff, because at that time, if you were sort of, you know, student, you're into basically a bit of sort of like, you know, vintage sort of, you know, culture, particularly for somebody like me, I was into film culture and stuff. So basically, shops in a city like Manchester will cater to that. You know, it will cater to that student audience. And probably, you know, Matt LeBlanc was probably like a teen heartthrob at the time. So you will get basically, you know, again, shops will basically cater to that. And it will cater to basically, you know, it's like if you go into shops today in the UK, you'll see a lot of merchandise for all these YouTubers. you know, these like young YouTubers who are basically, you know, the really big thing at the moment. So you'll see a lot of that. So that's basically what, but yeah, he basically saw that merchandise and thought, well, that's British culture. I can, you know, speak on that. And even though people tried to basically sort of point out the error of his ways, he basically just sort of like, you know, refused to be proved wrong.
Is that why he won't put Big Daddy in the Hall of Fame?
That is probably why he will pick, well, no, it's not Dave that won't pick Big Daddy in the Hall of Fame. He keeps saying that. He keeps saying he doesn't have a say on who goes in the Hall of Fame because he only has one vote and he doesn't vote on the British
category.
Yeah,
but you know the way Dave can work.
Despite the fact that every time when it comes to Hall of Fame season, he will go on massive rants why Big Daddy should not be in the Hall of Fame.
Did I tell you what me and Alex's idea would be to sort of go around Dave?
What's that?
And then eventually that Vince is going to put Big Daddy in the WWE Hall of Fame just to spite Dave.
Well, listen, Vince McMahon has done a lot less spiteful things, a lot more spite. You know, he's basically done more spiteful things than that. So I could see him basically, you know, doing something like that. Because he hasn't actually, as far as I'm aware, he's not actually put in a British wrestling icon. Because they seem to do this thing for other countries where they'll put in like a Japanese guy or a Mexican guy who hasn't been with WWF just to sort of give it that sort of flavor. So if he was to basically think that, like, this time we're going to put a European guy in there, he may well put Big Daddy in there. I mean, he has been mentioned on WWF shows from time to time. Particularly when we're in the UK, they've sort of mentioned Big Daddy.
That'd
just
be
in
awesome.
Passing, you know.
I think I would die laughing if that happened.
Oh, I would love it. It would be awesome. You know, it would absolutely be awesome.
All right. Let's see. We're getting a little sidetracked here. Let's go over. Obviously, we did the big rigmarole for Worst Picture. Worst Actor is a tie. Tom Arnold and Big Bully Carpool and the Stupids. So a three-way tie as far as his is concerned, but he's also tied with Paulie Shore in Biodome, which honestly, maybe you have to go back and watch, but I didn't think he was that bad.
I've never even heard of Biodome.
You're kidding.
No.
It's a so-so Paulie Shore film, but the fact that he's on there as worst actor with Tom Arnold, it's like, well, that's a little extreme.
Oh, hold on a minute. Hold on. I'm just looking at this Biodome. It's got Kylie Minogue in it, which... You know, fan. Patty Hearst? as in the Patty Hearst that was kidnapped and...
I'm not sure if that's one and the same. Let's see.
It is! It is her!
Oh dear.
Okay, well...
it's one of these things to where if it's on, Dazza, and you're watching it, I would recommend you just sit there. And
okay.
That's the biggest recommendation I can for that movie. I wouldn't recommend going out of your way. I wouldn't recommend you renting it. If it's on Netflix, I would steer clear from it. But if you're flipping through the television and it's on and you feel like watching it, by all means, and depending where it is, just keep watching it.
Okay, I'm sorry. I'm intrigued by this. I just wanted to check if Patty Hearst was actually in any other films. And she was. She was in Crybaby. She was in Serial Mom, which now that doesn't surprise because John Waters is really into basically, he's basically fascinated by serial killers and people who go to prison and stuff. So it doesn't surprise me that Patty Hearst would get him there. But yeah, she was in a film called A Dirty Shame. Again by John Waters. I don't even know he did that. So yeah, so Patty Hearst has basically been in films. There you go. We've learned something new today.
All right.
What else, what else have we got?
Yeah, and that's the one takeaway now that you have with today's show. The rest of it's going to go completely over your head, Dazza, and that's the only thing you're going to walk away remembering. Worst actress, Demi Moore in The Juror and Striptease, respectively. All right.
See, this is, I've noticed as well, you'll get certain actors and actresses who they seem to basically focus on. So this was obviously the year that they basically had it in for Demi Moore.
Yeah, and I hope, like I said, I mentioned this earlier, I've been saying this for quite a while. This is obviously the 90s before the internet where people could, you know, it'd be easier for people to communicate their opinions. Whereas you see these iterations of Razzies, and it's just like, okay, you're just doing this just to be catty because you just feel like ripping on this person. They're not necessarily the worst film or the most famous bad film, but you just feel like picking on this person. So that's your justification for it.
I think the thing that I can sort of equate this to is kind of, and it always goes back to pro wrestling, it's kind of the Roman Reigns type syndrome. When you've got someone who is basically not very good, but is basically, you know, being sort of pushed beyond their sort of talent. So somebody like Demi Moore obviously was basically not particularly a good actress, but she was basically making a lot of money in, you know, for films and being a starring role in films. Like, even if it was like really, really, you know, really, really bad films like Striptease and stuff. So they were basically sort of, you know, trying to, you know, protest against that, I'm guessing, as much as anything.
Yeah, it's not really fair, but they're just picking on them just to have a go.
No. I've got to say, I'm surprised Daylight didn't make it into Worst Picture, but...
That too. I'm like, there's so many bad films they could have picked from, but I get the feeling, obviously, this is a generation before the internet.
Still, Sylvester Stallone did get nominated for Worst Actor, though, in Daylight, so... Oh, God, I've just remembered, on Daylight, the final scene is basically when they basically manage to escape and everything. And him and this sort of like this really annoying woman who's like his, you know, his sort of now love interest. And the final word that he says is, "Next time, let's take the boat." And it's like, oh God.
Yeah, I know. I know.
It's bad.
Very much so. All right, going off of we brought up earlier how Marlon Brando's star must have fallen because he won Worst Supporting Actor in Island Dr. Moreau. Let's see other ones that were of note. Let's see. You brought up Quentin Tarantino in From Dusk Till Dawn, and he was nominated for a Worst Supporting Actor, but he did not walk away with that award, which I don't know if that's worse or not. Oh, God, this one's pretty great, and sadly he didn't win. But Worst Supporting Actresses. I know you don't have the list in front. Oh, wait, no, that's not it. Worst screen couples. Now, what won was Demi Moore and Burt Reynolds in Striptease, but another nomination was Pamela Anderson's Impressive Enhancements in Barbed Wire. That's mean. And then Beavis and Butthead, which after Pamela Anderson's Impressive Enhancements, it's kind of a letdown, but that's still pretty funny. Let's see. That's about it. Obviously, Worst Director and Worst Screenplay go to Striptease. Worst New Star, Pamela Anderson. That's about it. Worst Written Film grossing over $100 million. I guess they made a new award this year. Worst Written Film grossing over $100 million. Twister.
Yes, agreed.
Other notable entries are Independence Day, Mission Impossible, and A Time to Kill. All right. As we start to wrap this up, and since we're talking films, Dad, is there anything you've been watching as of late?
Yeah, I mean, because we only did the show on Wednesday, I've not been to the cinema since then, but a couple of things I've seen. One film I watched and really, really enjoyed, this, no matter how bizarre it sounds, is Rubber from 2010. And this is basically a horror movie, and it's all about a car tire that
yeah.
goes on a killer.
Oh, I've seen this back in the day. This was a huge phenomenon. I don't know how you didn't hear about it before back in the day, Dad.
Oh, I remember it, but it never I remember sort of seeing about the film, but it never got like a big release in the UK, so I never actually managed to see it. But yeah, it's basically the story is it's about a wheel tire that has telekinetic powers and can basically just make people explode. It actually starts by basically blowing up a rabbit and then a bird, and then it basically starts blowing people's heads apart, and it just goes on this killer rampage. And that's pretty much it. And it's got like a bizarre subplot, because it's basically there's a bunch of people who are watching the film on binoculars in the desert. And at the start, this guy comes up to him and pretty much tells him that everything that's about to happen happens for no real reason, and that's it. And it's just a really weird, and it's got this like subplot where they actually, they poison all the people who are watching the film. And then as the people actually in the film also said, that's okay, they're all dead now, the audience, we can all go home, it's all done. And then they say, oh, one of them's not eaten the food, so he's still alive. And then they have to carry on making the film. It's really bizarre meta four wall type thing, but it's kind of, it basically keeps you interested. So you've got the sort of, you've got that weird plot going on, and you've got this this tire that's basically stalking people and killing people. And in one really weird scene, it's basically sat in a room watching television. And there's another scene as well, which is what actually sets it going on its rampages. It goes past this I don't even know what sort of place you call it, but basically somewhere where they're burning tires. They've got like a big mountain of tires that they're basically burning. And the tire's basically just looking at them. Even though it's just a tire, you can sort of get the sense that it's kind of starting to get mad at seeing all these tires just being burnt. And that's when it goes on the killer rampage. But yeah, but I just as a really daft original movie, I actually really did enjoy this one.
Okay.
And I've also... I have a misfortune of the other night of watching the Rocky Horror Let's Do the Time Warp Again remake. Mm-hmm. God, this was awful.
See, I can defend this. It wasn't made to be another rendition of the film. It was just a live performance that they were showing on Fox.
Yeah, but they still should have made it good. I mean, the thing is... I kind of did have high expectations for this anyway. But the thing that I did expect was that it would be at least, the music would be good and everything, you know, and they would have good singers doing it. That is the very least that I would expect. And the performances of the songs was in the most part so lackluster. I mean, not so much in the singing, but in the actual sort of, you know, the accompaniment music and that, it just had no passion to it. Mm. It had nothing. And the thing is, as well, and there was good things about it. I mean, production wise, it looked good. You know, it was a very different tone from the original, but you know, but that was fine. It had sort of like, you know, the look of it was good, and the opening. I actually thought we went for like some, you know, something like, you know, really different, because the science fiction song, they actually did that, but they had like a cinema usher singing it as she's basically getting people into the cinema. And that was like really, really, you know, a new concept and really, really good. But the only people who were sort of any good in it were the guy who played Riff Raff was okay. The guy who played Rocky, again, was okay in that role. It was, you know, it was a good singer. And the one who played Janet, you know, she had a hell of a voice on her. You know, she did, you know, she sung really, really well. But for the most part, most of it was just sort of... I know you shouldn't compare it to the original, but they actually did everything word for word. And there was just so much of it that was sort of great in the original that they totally just blew. And part of that, I would basically... I would put the feet of the person who played Frankenfurter, Laverne Cox, mm-hmm. who was just just didn't seem to get the role, you know. But the stuff that she was supposed to do, you know, the tone of it was just all wrong. It was she just came across as if she had a star quality about her that she thought, I don't really have to. I can basically just do this, you know, how I want. And it just sort of, you know, the bits where they were sort of like supposed to be passionate and sad, she came across me as like quite flippant. And it just basically, I just really, really dislike this. But on the whole, this is another thing. They had Adam Lambert in this as Eddie, who Eddie was basically the Meatloaf character. And it wasn't any good. Mm. And the thing is, I went to a concert last year. And it was Queen with Adam Lambert singing, you know, in basically taking the place of Freddie Mercury. And it was one of the best concerts I've ever been to.
Huh.
It was absolutely amazing. It was, for start, it was the Queen sound. Even though Freddie wasn't there, it was still the Queen sound. And Adam Lambert, basically, I mean, imagine basically going on tour with Queen and basically doing Freddie Mercury's music and being good at it. He was absolutely excellent. He brought his, he didn't try to do an impression of Freddie Mercury. He basically brought his own thing to it, but it was still in keeping with the Queen vibe. It was excellent. It was absolutely fabulous. And in this, it just wasn't, it just didn't work. And if you get Adam Lambert and he doesn't, you know, at least to me, if he wasn't in, you know, he wasn't as, you know, that good, you know, that good in it, there's just the whole vibe. It just missed the mark on so many things. There were so many bits that felt like, you know, rushed. You know, bits that were sort of like, you know, meant to be funny, but we just sort of, you know, missed out on. So, yeah, I, you know, it basically made me realise how good the original Rocky Horror film is, even though I didn't like, really need that. But yeah, I was not impressed by this film at all. And I don't know what's happened with Tim Curry. I don't know if Tim Curry... I probably don't want to say anything about Tim Curry because I don't know what he's like these days. But I did Quite not large. Like him as the narrator. But I don't know. I got this kind of vibe that... And I don't really want to say too much about me cruel or anything, but I... I was uncomfortable watching Tim Curry in this.
I'm looking at photos of this. Yeah, I could see why. I can see. And for those of you who need it spelled out, just do a Google image search on Tim Curry in 2016 or 2015, I should say, and you'll have your answer.
Yeah, I was kind of.
Well,
Actually, I've just read up on why that is, but
I'll try to defend these things because I know they did one I think last year of Grease, and it was very much sort of the same production value the what you're talking about the casting choices, and all things considered it was very successful. So the idea that they're going to turn around next year and do Rocky Horror Picture Show with the exam kind of production, I'm sure with the same kind of staff, it shouldn't surprise me that they decided to do this with this kind of approach. But at the same time, it's. I don't think it's really fair to compare the two. This is sort of just a unique viewing it, one night experience. This isn't like it wouldn't be fair because you're comparing the movie who I have to imagine that had a bigger budget and it was still a film. This was just a live rendition that they were doing for Fox. So they
spent $20 million on it.
On the movie?
No, on this this TV special. We spent $20 million on it.
Okay, that's pretty damning.
If you consider that basically Deadpool, right, that's like one third of what we spent on Deadpool.
Well, one third.
I know it's a different, but yeah. But what I'm saying, the thing is, like I said, the production of it, you know, the look of it was fine. But to me, you know, if you're going to do a musical, get people who are really, really excellent singers and get that should be the thing that you're focusing on. And that is not that. There are many, many talented singers and musicians out there. I go to musicals a lot. Okay, I have a thing for musicals. You know, I go to them a lot. And I will go and see, you know, sort of small productions where basically every time I've gone, for example, gone to see Rock of Ages, I've been seeing him in many different cities. I love that play because basically I've got a thing for 80s hair bands and everything. Everyone I go to, it's, you know, the music is always excellent. And it's not that difficult to do. All you need to do is get a really, really good session group and people who are really, really good singers. And then you can, and then everything else basically should fall into place around it. Because if you can get that and basically just blast those hits out and make them sound good, then that's basically, you know, three quarters of the film right there. And they didn't do that. You know, Laverne Cox, who, you know, I don't know. I see that we're sort of going for something a bit alternative in there, but she just wasn't good in that role. The bits that were supposed to be funny. If you're following the template of the sort of, you know, of the Rocky Horror script and everything, you should at least sort of know the bits that sort of, you know, work and have a bit of sort of tone in it and try and match that tone in it. I'm not saying you have to make everything, you know, the same as it was, But at least, so to, you know, do the stuff that works. And if you're going to do something, you know, of a different tone on delivering certain lines and coming from a certain angle, you know, make sure that it's at least good. And a lot of the things that, you know, the one who played, you know, Columbia, who was one of my favourite characters in the original Rocky Horror and absolutely stole the show. In this one, the character was just like, you know, really, really bland. They went for like more like a surly teenager than anything. But it just sort of, you know, this one I was not impressed with at all.
I hate to give you ammunition, Dazza, but how much did you say they spent on this thing? 30 million?
20 million.
20, okay. You're going to want to sit down because I think you're going to get really mad. Go okay, on. I'm looking up Rocky Horror Picture Show, the original one that came out in 1975, right?
Yeah.
Want to know how much they spent?
I'm guessing it was less.
Considerably less. $1.4 million.
Yeah.
now, that sounds damning. That's pretty bad. I think we'll admit that's pretty bad. But you know what? Okay, to be fair, and I've done the math here, so believe me, there's a second half to this. Now, obviously, that's in 1975 money. So I went to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, obviously using their inflation calculator. Now, mind you, the inflation calculator did bump this up, concerning a lot more in 2016 money, but only bumped it up to 6.2 million.
Oh dear!
It's like I'm defending this, but I'm giving you tons of ammunition. Hey, maybe it was really expensive to license Rocky Horror Picture, and when they found out it was going to be on television, it's like, oh, we got to pay. That's at least $5 million right there. That's sad. That's real sad.
Yeah, I'm just reading what some of the critics have actually said to this, and it's been pretty much sort of trash. But somebody actually, this is a point. Somebody said it's like Glee doing Rocky Horror.
That actually, the sad part would be that actually probably be better.
That actually probably would have. They actually did an episode of that where Glee do Rocky Horror, and I've not seen it, but it probably is a lot better than this. But yeah, it was it was not good. I mean, it's always that thing when you see people doing songs that you really, really love and stuff. I mean, there's a song Frankenfurter sings basically in both of them, but it's the you know, the song where he sings about going home, and it's just this like really, really beautiful, touching, like, you know, goosebump inducing song, sung with passion and everything. And in this one, the way they presented it, because they sort of give the performance a standing ovation, because you've got an audience watching the show, like going to the Rocky Horror, you know, cinema experience. And so it's meant to be this like really, really stirring moment, but it just comes across as, like I said, the word I used again is flippant. It was sort of, you know, no, you know, it was almost as if I sort of, you know, I don't have to try it, this type thing. Because I'm a star, you know. But yeah, I'll just, if you are interested in this, if you like Rocky Horror and you are interested in you know, this new version, just put on the original and stick with that. Don't watch this, honestly. Well, actually, watch the first 5 minutes, because the opening, what we do with the science fiction song, that is quite, I quite like that.
That is my favorite song in the movie, so maybe
yeah.
I'll watch that.
Well, what they did with that was quite, you know, different and everything. So that bit I liked, but everything else, yeah, not a fan.
All right. Since we talked all things that you've watched, have you read anything as of late that you've enjoyed? I think you said on Facebook that you had got some comics through your delivery service.
Yeah, I think the ones I basically got for this week, because I'm basically sort of getting the my comics delivered, because I basically work in a place where we don't have a comic shop. But this week the ones I got were the Suicide Squad latest one and the Justice League latest one. Which I'm kind of keeping up with Justice League for when we get the Justice League versus Suicide Squad crossover, which I'm looking forward to.
I'm curious, what issue of Suicide Squad did you get?
It's the, oh god, is it number 5? It's the one where they basically got Zod locked up in the in the prison. And this one was kind of like an in-between storyline one, where they basically just finished off a storyline where they basically went to Russia and fought their version of the Suicide Squad, and they basically come back with Zod and Amanda Waller's basically trying to come up with ways that she can basically use Zod. Which it was kind of like an in between storyline that was sort of setting up the next one, and I really quite liked it. I generally do enjoy the Suicide Squad story, so I really enjoy this. Justice League, this kind of had like that sort of like fear storyline that started in the last one, and it was kind of okay, but it just sort of never really seemed to go anywhere.
Yeah, I'm surprised you're still reading it.
Sorry?
I'm surprised you're still reading it.
Yeah, like I said, I'm sort of like stuck with it because I'm just sort of, I want to stay, in touch with it for when I get to like, the big sort of Suicide Squad, crossover thing, So that's kind of why I'm watching, still reading it.
Yeah, the two DC books that I read this week that I really liked, I think you read the Rebirth issue, both Titans and Teen Titans. Are you reading either of those series?
No.
Oh, that's a shame.
No, I'm not reading those.
What else have you read?
I'm reading a really good book at the moment called The Road to Nowhere by somebody called Trish Dixon. And it's basically a journey through America. This British guy who is a boxing correspondent. He basically decided to go to America on several trips and just start tracking down old time boxers and just who basically careers had done and everything, and just see what had actually happened. Try and interview her and so it's kind of like a road trip type sort of book, but with the sort of each city he goes to, he basically tries to track down the local boxing legends. And it's a really good book. It's a really good sort of, if you're a sort of a fight fan, it's kind of one of these which is kind of like food for thought, shall we say, because you're sort of, you're finding out what happens to people when they, when you find out basically what actually happened to them during their careers and what happened to them afterwards. And for a lot of them, it's kind of sort of like, it's real, some of them have sort of like really good lives. Some of them have basically sort of had really rough things happen to them, sort of like, when they had finished with the sport, they were sort of, the quite common theme that you get from a lot of this is a lot of them fell into sort of into drugs and alcoholism and stuff. That they basically sort of, and a lot of them during while they were fighting, to be honest, and a lot of them you'll find got exploited quite a lot. A lot of them, even though were sort of like on the surface, made big money from some of the fights, what they actually took home and what they actually ended up with after everyone had their little cuts, and the taxmen had their cuts and everything, a lot of them were basically left with not a hell of a lot, shall we say.
That's a shame.
And a lot of it is, it is very successful in getting the interviews, because he basically, a lot of the times he basically just turns up, he basically either just gives them a call when he gets into town, or he'll basically go into these like really dodgy neighborhoods where they live and basically just like knock on the door. And a lot of the times the fighters seem more than happy to talk to him. And I guess it's because for a lot of them, it's kind of it's that sad thing that they're getting attention off someone and they're getting to sort of talk about their old sort of like, their glory days and stuff like that. And not all of them are sad stories. Some of them are sort of happily married. There's a few. Buster Douglas, who was the guy who first beat Tyson, he took his money, even though his career basically nosedived after that fight, he basically took his money and got into property development.
Ooh, nice.
And there's others who basically, another common theme is that there's quite a few that basically got into basically, working with sort of, working with the community with the sort of like,